105 Drive with Julian Clover.
And on a Tuesday afternoon, time to welcome my guest. Cambridge City Council has been accredited as a living wage employer by the National Living Wage Foundation. The announcement at the start of Living Wage Week means employees of third-party contractors that work on the council's premises will largely receive at least the National Living Wage. Here to talk about this is Councillor George Owers. He's the Executive Councillor for Finance and Resources. He also represents Coleridge Ward for Labour. Hello, George. Thank you for coming in.
Good afternoon.
My debut on Cambridge 105.
Yes, you are most welcome. It's not just the City Council, though, is it? Because I think you've been talking to some local employers as well.
Well, we have. Yesterday, we held an event to discuss the issue with some local employers from Cambridge and try to give them some impression of some of the benefits of paying their staff the living wage. So we've, for example, been making the argument that some of the research suggests that there are benefits in terms of higher productivity and higher retention rates, so businesses spend less time having to recruit more staff, and because of the high turnover. So we had quite a number of local businesses in the meeting yesterday, and we had a very positive response from a number of them. So we're hoping to, now we have our own internal accreditation, we're hoping that we can start to spread the message more widely in the private and also the public sector.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because if the opening gambit is here we are, we've got this idea and we think it's going to cost you this so much more per staff member, then you're not going to necessarily be welcomed exactly with open arms.
Well, that is kind of what you might initially think, and undoubtedly the extra wage bill is an issue. There's no point saying it's not. But I think there are a lot of enlightened employers in Cambridge who see that although there may be short-term issues, there are benefits in the longer term in terms of paying the living wage. And it's not just an issue of retention and productivity. It's also a question of reputation, I think, because there's a lot of, obviously Cambridge has a lot of pretty conscientious and kind of ethically minded people who want to buy and consume goods from ethical firms, as we saw this with the fair trade movement has had a lot of success in Cambridge. And I think one of way we want to develop this campaign that the City Council is running in favour of the living wage is we want to try to extend it into a consumer led campaign to some degree, so that people have the information so they know which firms and so on are living wage employers and which are not, so they can choose to spend their money in an ethical way if they so choose. So that will, in the end, if lots of consumers decide to spend their money in this ethical way, it will hit companies in the pocket who don't pay the living wage.
I think
wage.
You might get a sticker in the window, rather like we do for the restaurants, for example, saying, you know, I'm a living wage employer or something like that.
That is what we have in mind, right? In the long run, we are just employing somebody to coordinate a living wage campaign, and part of their job will be to proactively start to go out to businesses and talk to them and hopefully develop what we might call a kind of kite mark campaign, whereby people do get an official, like, City Council / Living Wage Foundation accreditation, like they do, as you say, with, like, food and safety at the moment, so that people can say, hey, this firm or this cafe or this pub or whatever is living wage, and you can choose to kind of favour the living wage businesses.
I guess people forget, don't they, that there are plenty of poor areas in Cambridge where every penny counts, as opposed to obviously quite well-off areas in other parts of the city.
Yes, I mean, one thing that the City Council is currently doing is we're doing what we're calling an anti-poverty strategy, to look at ways in practical terms that we can help some of the people in Cambridge who are struggling. And yes, we all know that there are areas that have persistent problems and that don't share in the prosperity that much of the rest of the city enjoys. But I mean, the point I'd make is it's not just some of those areas. Like, we all know, for example, King's Hedges and Arbury and Abbey areas do have higher levels of deprivation than the rest of Cambridge. But it's also a lot of people who are struggling and who can be made with things like high housing costs and high rents, who may not be traditionally poor exactly. They may even be extremely well educated and doing not a bad job.
Because equally, you could have somebody within a well-off area of Cambridge who, for no fault of their own, falls on hard times, and they arguably need the help just as much as somebody in one of these other parts of the city who you mentioned.
Exactly. I mean, it's not the case that people, the low-income households and people who are struggling, are confined to a few areas. There are areas in different wards which you and areas of the city which you may not associate with these problems. But also, there are specific issues which affect some areas which are relatively wealthy. So, for example, fuel poverty is often an issue in parts of the city where there are big, drafty houses that are difficult to insulate and so on. And those houses, and a lot of those areas are not necessarily in the poorer areas. They're actually the highest level of fuel poverty in Cambridge is Newnham, not renowned for being the poorest part of Cambridge. And that's why something else we're doing is we're looking at an anti-poverty scheme in terms of people's fuel and water bills, in which we're going to be piloting some schemes whereby we look to see if there how we can help with uptake of measures such as the Green Deal, which is a government initiative to get people to insulate their houses and get some payback on their bills as they save the money and so on. And so we're looking at trying to have an approach which is not just this area is poor, this area is wealthy, and we'll ignore the wealthy areas, like looking at it in a more complex...
So is this one of these things where perhaps it's a government initiative to start off with, and then you can tailor it perhaps to make it more Cambridge-friendly and target those areas of the city where the council, because you're here, can work out what needs doing?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, we have to work in partnership with other organisations because we're a city council and we have limited resources. So there's partly the Green Deal, and there's also the county council is currently doing a scheme, which I think is an excellent scheme, which a collective energy switching scheme, in order to make it so that if large numbers of people sign up to it, the county council can negotiate on wholesale markets and therefore get people lower energy prices. And one thing we're trying to do is this scheme will only work if it gets high take up, and often take up in this kind of schemes are often dominated by kind of more eloquent middle class people. There's nothing wrong with that, but what we're trying to do is also get people to take up these measures who are really struggling with their bills and who may not typically have high levels of take up. So it's working with the county, it's working with the government where we can, and it's working with other partners in the voluntary sector.
I'm interested in how the living wage is going to work within the council. Presumably, it's fairly straightforward for somebody who's employed directly by the council and not through a third party contractor. What can you actually? What kind of pressure can you put on, I don't know, there's some of the services within the council which have been subcontracted? I guess typically it's going to be cleaning services and perhaps some administration services in places.
Yeah, that's a good question. There are basically three elements to living wage accreditation. The first and easiest element of it is making sure you pay your own workers part-time and full-time, and that's been done. The second part is making sure you pay agency workers, who kind of fall somewhere in between the two.
And so these are people who come in, I don't know, somebody's off sick, say, for a couple of months and you need to fill that particular post temporarily.
And also we use some agency workers for things like the folk festival, things like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the third and most difficult element of it is contractors. Now, in order to get accreditation from the Living Wage Foundation, the City Council has had to provide a plan for how we plan to go about making sure that over a period of time our contractors pay the living wage. Now, we can't be done overnight, and the Living Wage Foundation recognises that you can't just suddenly...
Because presumably there's contracts in place.
Exactly, there's the contracts in place.
I dare say that some of them have been won by companies who have, not necessarily for Cambridge City Council, but in some places they might have been won by companies who really, you know, cut down on the wages in order to give a cost-effective contract.
That is a risk, and that's why, for example, we have our building cleaning contract is coming up for tender in later this year, and we have done everything that is legally possible to write into that contract and write into the terms of the tender that that whoever wins it has to be a living wage employer.
And I guess if you're doing it going forward, then everybody's starting from an even keel, as it were.
Yeah, and well, where there are existing contracts, first of all, what we're doing at the moment is going through a process of identifying the contracts in which it's an issue. So there will be some contracts in which most people will be paid over the living wage anyway, in which case it's not so much of an issue. But there will be some contracts where there are lower paid workers and that are already existing contracts. And they're the kind of big risk, not the risk, but they're the ones we're kind of focusing on. And what we can do there is look at, so for example, where there are break clauses in the contracts or when the contract comes up for renewal, and we can use those as opportunities in order to bring that contract up to the living wage standard. But it, as I said, it can't happen overnight, because if we tore up all of our contracts, it'd cost us millions. So clearly we have to, and the Living Wage Foundation recognises the practicalities, but I'm hopeful that, you know, in a fairly prompt timetable of a year or two, we can really get the vast majority of our contractors up to this standard. And of course, once big institutions like the City Council, and hopefully it would like it if other other local councils or in public institutions would also start to get on board with this agenda. Once big institutions like that, who have lots of contractors, start to do this, there comes a point in the market for whatever for the various areas where it actually makes more sense for the various players in that market to just become living wage employers.
I guess a trickle down effect as well, isn't there? Sort of a halo effect of others participating. But there is a danger, surely, if somebody is on a low wage, they might perhaps be receiving one of the benefits which is out there, and you know, so what ends up happening, they get more money in their pay packet, but the man from the Social Security office says, I'm terribly sorry, we're going to have to reduce the amount of money we're giving to you in family credit now.
Well, that's an issue that is inherent to the benefit trap is a wider issue in the welfare system, which unfortunately we can't do anything about. And I think
or worse, perhaps, you know, there's some landlord somewhere thinks, brilliant, I can put up the rent now. You know,
well, I'd argue that that's an argument for, you know, doing more in terms of looking at restricting or controlling rents. But yes, of course, there are dangers attendant on this, and I do think we need to look at. For the other issue, of course, which is a related issue, is that actually a lot of people who are earning low incomes or below the living wage are, of course, taxed, which does strike me as being somewhat a little bit perverse. Why not just not tax them in the first place? And that's a wider political issue, which is kind of beyond the pay grade of the Cambridge City Council.
It's tricky what it goes into. That. It's one of these things, isn't it, which straddles between national and local government, which you have to deal with on your side of things.
Yeah. Ultimately, what we'd like is to be given more power over our own destiny in terms of the city council. So we'd like to be a unitary authority, rather than having this ridiculous situation where the city and the county council are split, which would give us more control over our own destiny. But some issues will always be national, but I think the fact that I think it needs to be said, however, that the fact that yes, there are issues in terms of welfare, and we are the Cambridge City Council we recently won an award for being one of the councils that has adapted best to the welfare reforms and is looking after people the best in the country. So we are doing what we can in order to, because it's worth also mentioning, of course, that a lot of people in this city are suffering from various unfortunate changes attendant on changes to the welfare system. So the bedroom tax, for example, and other things like that. So we need to help people on that. But at the end of the day, making sure that people earn a decent wage makes sense on a national level as well, because if you are paying a higher wages, then actually people have less will be claiming less fewer benefits. They'll be claiming there'll be less need for them to claim housing benefit. Ultimately, it will save the state and the government a huge amount of money if we eliminate poverty pay. And I think that's a really fundamental point.
Yeah, no, that's good. George, thank you very much for coming in and speaking to 105 Drive tonight. George Hours, Executive Councillor for Finance and Resources, and also representing Coleridge Ward.